and I'm pleased to be joined on my right by our Chief Judge Frankie Moore of North Platte, and on my left by Judge Francie Lieberman of Gretna. We originally had five cases this morning. The fourth case, State v. McSwain, has been continued until November. So we will proceed forward with the four other cases in the order listed. And Judge Reedman will be sitting on the first two cases, and Judge Ingotti will sit on the last two cases, and on the last case I am recused, and so Chief Judge Moore will take over as our presiding judge for that case. We are streaming live this morning on NETV, so if we have any cases of a sensitive nature, first names only, just keep that in mind as we are discussing those cases. With that, we will proceed with our first case, O'Neill v. O'Neill. Hey. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, sir. May it please the court, my name is David Kiker, and counsel for the appellant Scott O'Neill in this matter. Primary issue before the court, we've obviously identified several in our brief. Primary issue of concern is that my client was not granted any hearing time with his two-year-old daughter by the trial court. It is our contention that it was an abuse of discretion, and the trial court failed to award my client any parenting time whatsoever. Get into this a little bit more in a moment. Main reason for not awarding any parenting time was my client is an alcoholic. I think the law is very straightforward that my client has a sense of the case. I think my client stated on the record he's been to treatment 15 different times over the years.
Did he have a visitation during the temporary period?
He had an order of visitation. Judge Jacobson had ruled at the temporary hearing, ordered temporary child support, and ordered, according to the Lancaster County local rules, awarded him parenting time. There was an order of it. The appellee didn't allow that parenting time to occur, even though my client had attempted to effectuate his visitation. We filed a contempt in that matter, and that was ultimately overruled by Judge Strong at trial. That was set for trial on the same day as the divorce itself.
Was the parenting time that was allowed in the temporary order, was that for overnight?
It was for overnight.
And unsupervised?
It was. The only provision I recall in that order unique to this case, and not just following the set local rules in Lancaster County that we have in our local rules, was that my client could consume alcohol. I think it was 24 hours prior to or during his parenting time. And again, I think that decision made sense. I think that safety restriction that Judge Jacobson adopted in the temporary order made sense to me. Again, my client does have a history of alcohol abuse. He met the appellee in treatment. She was in treatment in 04 for methamphetamine use. So the two of them have a long history of either alcoholism or addressing drug-related matters.
What had been your proposal to the trial court for visitation going forward?
I had asked for standard visitation, which would be the every other weekend, Thursday to Monday, along with summer parenting time and the holiday parenting time, all of them according to the local rules in Lancaster County. We had no objection to there being a provision that he didn't consume alcohol prior to or during parenting time. We were certainly open to that. But instead, the court just denied him outright any parenting time. Problematic about that, again, is in the temporary order certainly made sense, and the final order in the decree just denied any parenting time until, I think the language is, such time as he obtains sobriety and maintains sobriety. If he does that, then he can bring the matter back in on a modification, but until that occurs, and that's a bit vague, obtaining sobriety and maintaining, how long does one maintain? I think it's just, it's problematic, and I think it's an abuse of discretion wording it in that matter and just denying him the parenting time. If you look at the evidence, and I looked carefully through the evidence, in fact, I look at the appellee's brief as well, I don't see any evidence that exists that shows that my client has ever been a risk of harm or a safety concern to his daughter. If you look at the record, there's no allegations of him being abusive to her or neglecting her, of him doing something or not doing something he should have done to keep her safe. In fact, I don't see anywhere in the record where there's evidence that he was even intoxicated in the presence of his daughter. That's why the decision, I guess, is so hard to understand. I look at all these other cases that we see, district court cases and juvenile court cases in particular, where parenting time is addressed, and I identified several of these cases in my brief where you see parents who are involved in a domestic altercation, law enforcement's involved in front of the children, they get parenting time. There was a case involving a woman who had actually tried to commit suicide in the presence of her children. She gets parenting time. The question, I don't think, is does a parent get or not get parenting time? And the question is, what needs to be put in place, especially in a case like this, to ensure the safety of the child? I think Judge Strong, when she took this case over from Judge Jacobson, had all kinds of options. She could have required drug and alcohol testing prior to the visit, not allowing consumption of alcohol prior to or during the visit, like Judge Jacobson ordered. She could have ordered therapeutic parenting time, supervised parenting time, monitored parenting time. There are a host of options that were available to Judge Strong, but instead of considering one of those options, she went with the most restrictive option, which is not really an option at all, denying my client a relationship with his daughter.
Was that requested by the mother at the trial?
It was requested by the mother at the trial. The mother had brought a proposed parenting plan to the court. I think the judge, Judge Strong, altered it slightly, but that parenting plan of her proposal was no parenting time to my client until, again, this contingent order, this a bit vague order requiring him to, again, obtain sobriety, which I think we all know what that means, but maintain it, again, maintain it for how long? What does that look like? We get into trial on a modification. Has there been a material change? He was an alcoholic for 15 years prior. There's just a host of issues that make it incredibly problematic to have language like that. I think what Judge Jacobson did on a temporary basis makes total sense in these circumstances. And if the court had additional concerns, again, there's all kinds of other options with supervision or monitoring. I think there's drug and alcohol. There's these patches they wear which give you an 80-hour read on alcohol consumption.
Well, he was opposed to the 80 hours, though, correct?
That's true. That he was. But Judge Strong still had it available to her as an option. I think that was the appellee's suggestion to the court. I think they had brought that up. And you're right. He was not in favor of that.
At the time the temporary order was entered, did the mother contest him having any parenting time?
I don't recall. That's a tough question to answer. I don't recall if at that hearing her position was no parenting time at that point. I couldn't represent it to you that it was. And it's hard in cases like this because these are all done, you know, in chambers on affidavit. There's not really a record of that. So I can't represent to the court what her position was. Another issue before
the court. Can you turn your attention to, since we're probably running a little short here, his computation of his income for purposes of the child support and alimony?
Yes. Yeah, I can address that?
Yes.
Okay. My client is self-employed. He runs Restoration Pros. He does home improvement and home restoration. The issue that I had with the court was, I don't think this is a case where, because he's self-employed, you just look at the last 3 years. I don't think you look at 2012, 13, and 14. Reason for that is 2014 was his biggest year. While it was his biggest year, it wasn't because of anything that he did or didn't do. His wife, who was the bookkeeper for the business, she had brought in the three biggest accounts they had ever had. I don't have in my notes the exact amounts, but I know it was, I think, over a $200,000 contract with Nebraska Diamond. There was a huge contract with Elliott Equipment. There was another contract with, actually, the appellee's father. All three of those jobs were obtained because of the appellee and her relationships or friendships with folks who worked at Nebraska Diamond or Elliott Equipment.
The court set his income at $5,000 a month, and just several months before that, he had submitted an affidavit that said he was making $5,000 a month. So where's the problem here when the court set it according to his own affidavit?
Well, I don't think the court did set it according to his affidavit because that would have been dealt with on a temporary basis. What we're asking the court to do is, instead of, you know, how we kind of do a Band-Aid on temporaries at trial, we had an opportunity to present all of the income information from both parties. I think my client had an opportunity to reflect on what's the value of my wife to the business. Now I'm going to have to hire somebody to replace her. I've got a 15-year license suspension because of a DUI history, my issues with alcohol. My wife drove me to all these job sites. I'm going to have to hire somebody to transport me. I think my client looked at it as from the credit standpoint, he has terrible credit. The record, there's evidence in the record that my client needed his wife's credit. Her credit cards are access to credit, so he could do these construction jobs. A lot of these jobs would require funds up front to fund the job and to get paid on the back side of it. So the divorce, I think, and my client processing the impact of this divorce drastically has impacted this, whether it should be $5,000 or, in our opinion, less. I don't think 2014 should be considered in that three-year mix. And I don't think looking at his affidavit from attempts hearing is proper evidence. I think it makes more sense and it's more relevant to look at the evidence at trial after this divorce had pended and my client had actually had an opportunity to realize the impact of paying somebody to transport him, not getting these huge referrals from his wife due to relationship she's got, not having her credit available to him, and just the cost of replacing her in the business.
Thank you. Anything further? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
May it please the Court, Andrew Joyce for the appellee. And, Your Honors, we heard a lot today about the alcohol issues with the appellant, and I think that those are, as Mr. Kiker said, well documented. You know, whether it's 15 or 16 different stints in rehab and only one successful completion, which was only one that was ordered by the court, not this particular court, but it was court-ordered rehab, and that was the only one that he had completed. So,
Mr. Joyce, what's the evidence that his drinking had any impact on his daughter?
Well, Your Honor, I think the issue is with this specific most recent stint, this is something where he self-described in his affidavit as a severe relapse in his temporary custody affidavit, in which he essentially stated that he's struggling terribly with his alcoholism. This was in March of 2015. Struggling terribly with his alcoholism and is barely functional. He stated that at trial that a normal night of drinking is 8 to 9 drinks a night. And I think the issue is, you know, not the alcohol alone, but the effects on him when he's under the influence of alcohol. And I think we've shown that through the trial testimony that he has these explosive mood swings when he's under the influence of alcohol, to the point where at one moment he's saying, you know, that I love you and have you, and then the next minute he is saying, you know, I hope your brain tumor kills you, or turns suicidal, where he's saying, you know, I'm not doing okay, I'm mentally giving up on life. So I think those are sort of the mindset issues that are at play and that are particularly concerning. And I think that,
had he ever threatened to hurt the child?
You know, Judge, I think based on the record, we don't have any evidence that he's made any direct threats. But I think one of the issues really relating to this is, and I think it's a large issue with these marital proceedings with somebody who is more reclusive with their personalities. And I think that generally with these people, you really don't have a lot of, you know, we don't have cameras to see what happens inside the house when, you know, when my client's not there, how he interacts with the child when he's not, or when she's not there. All we can see is, you know, to get a glimpse at his psyche during this severe relapse that he's described, is, you know, what is he, you know, what are the emotional effects that we're observing through this process.
But this is speculation at this point, isn't it? You know, speculating what could happen to the child. And how would an order providing some sort of safety net, either like the temporary order or therapeutic or supervised visitation, how would that be harmful at this stage, keeping in mind the preservation of the parent-child relationship?
Right. And, Judge, I think that, you know, to your point, I think the Nebraska Supreme Court has been clear that parental rights should be withheld, or I guess should be granted, except that they're extraordinary circumstances. And I think that, you know, with this, with this severe relapse, I think that, you know, you'd want to see, you know, him making some sort of proactive measures to address the alcoholism so it doesn't affect the minor child. I think that he hasn't done that too. Just to your point earlier to Mr. Kiker, you know, we asked him plainly and simply, would you be willing after your weekend visitation to take a test to prove if you've been sober for the preceding 80 hours? He wasn't willing to do that. So I think the judge can look at that and say, okay, based on the evidence before me, we can see that he's really not dedicated to a life of sobriety and or even sobriety during this relapse.
Well, he was willing for the 24 hours prior to and during visitation not to consume alcohol.
Right. And I think, Judge, that the issue there is, you know, generally that's going to be done during a breathalyzer when you pick them up and breathalyzer when the child is dropped off. The danger there is, I think, that especially when it relates to alcoholics, there's a lot of behavior that is masked. And, you know, you can be sober for a period. But I think that if we're asking him to be, I don't think it's unreasonable after the visitation period to ask him to say, okay, for the preceding 80 hours, were you sober? Because, Judge, I think we have some serious concerns as it relates to his emotional stability and the, you know, generally the condition of the house that he's providing to the minor child during these visitation periods.
What changed between the time of the temporary order where he was granted parenting time and the final order other than the judge?
Right.
What changed?
And I think the text messages that were exchanged and that are in evidence, I think, sort of allude to this. You know, prior to, you know, the temporary action, it's been no secret that he's been an alcoholic, and that hasn't really necessarily been the major issue. I think the major issue has been now he's talking about suicide. Now he's talking about, you know, bartering with the, or using the minor child as a bargaining chip to the point where he says, you know, I'm willing to walk away, and you'll never hear from me again. You'll never hear from, you know, the minor child. Ella will never hear from me again if you accept my settlement proposal. I think those sort of examples are dangerous when you're looking at, you know, whether he's mentally stable during this period, which he's dubbed a severe relapse, to really exercise those parenting responsibilities. And, you know, I think that it's also relevant that, you know, during the period of time that he was under the temporary order, he didn't make any single child support payments to the mother to benefit the minor child. And I think that, you know, in totality, I think that shows that he's really, during this severe relapse, he's really at a dangerous place where he's not considering the best interests of the minor child. And I think that, you know, in light of that, the judge was, instead of waiting for something terrible to happen, I think the judge took a more proactive approach and said, okay, you know, you've acknowledged this is a severe relapse and that you're, in your own terms, barely functional. So you're going to have to show that, you know, you're going to get to a point of functionality where you can care for yourself and then, you know, care for your minor child after that.
Couldn't there have been an order fashioned, though, in the decree to provide, allow him contact with certain stipulations? Then the ball's in his court. If he does not meet those stipulations, no visitation. But this is almost akin to a termination of his parental rights because he has no way to see his child right now.
Your Honor, respectfully, I think I disagree. I think that there are, within the decree, he still has time that he can make calls, he can interact with the child, he can engage in, he can attend extracurricular activities that are set forth in the decree. I think the biggest concern, though, what was those visitation periods, or were those visitation periods? And so I think that there are other aspects of parenting that he's still engaged in, those rights that he still has, but until he, you know, can attain control of his life and show that he is responsible enough to care for himself, let alone the minor child, I think that the judge was correct in taking a more proactive approach and suspending visitation periods until that time.
Can you address the income, the $5,000 a month that was attributed to him?
Yes, Judge. You know, to your point, I think that, you know, in his affidavit in March, the appellant stated that he represented to the court that his income was $5,000 a month. But, you know, even if he hadn't done that, I think we set forth in the brief pretty clearly that his income really was right around that $5,000 mark, excluding the, you know, if we just look, the restoration pros business started in 2011. If we look at the growth that company has experienced from its first year, I said it was 186% growth in 2012, 87% growth in 2013, and from their biggest year, as they represented in 2014, at that point it was only a 25% growth. So I think you're seeing more of a plateau in terms of what the company is doing. But, you know, based on the revenues of the company, I think we broke down that that his profit that he would end up taking home was right around that $5,000 mark, even if he hadn't represented to the court that that was his earnings. I think it also is relevant to point out that during the marriage, while my client was making $14,000 working as a bookkeeper, which is under minimum wage, they were essentially living off of the Restoration Pros income and revenue to meet their living expenses. And so I think that when she's not going to be, you know, taking those dividends, so to speak, that the revenue is going to be more than sufficient to meet his child support obligation. I see that I'm out of time.
Thank you.
Unless there are any other questions.
Anything,
I don't.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? Okay. All right. Thank you. The case is submitted. We appreciate you being here this morning.